6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello and welcome to Imps Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes, nay, it's however long it's gonna be. It's the WrestleMania special, it's the big effort edit. To future edit me. But yes, WrestleMania Night 1, WrestleMania Night 2, all of the hoo-ha, Monday Night Raw. How the hell do I cover all of this in my usual format? I have absolutely no idea. Jesus Christ. The last show that I did, I'm trying to remember what had happened at that point. At that point, there had been certain people who had done their little interviews. It was kind of just that question of, what are they doing? What are they doing? But when I recorded, the John Cena interview hadn't happened yet. So there'd been interviews, but it's fair to say they hadn't finished what the perception was going to be going into WrestleMania, just in terms of, wait, what? You're actually pushing this way? And when I recorded, there were certain rumours of possibilities that could happen at WrestleMania, which hadn't really started doing the rounds yet when I recorded on the Thursday. However, over then WrestleMania weekend happens, and night one is mostly shite. Then you get a decent WWE story main event match. Then night two show overall is so much better, especially like the first three matches. Then there's the Becky Lynch return tag, which is literally just a WrestleMania return moment. And then the main event has become like the most talked about controversial part of what was on the shows over the weekend, and the amount of stuff that it's then span out. We've now had The Rock coming out saying that, oh, I had nothing to do with that shit, essentially on the, I think it was Pat McAfee show. Like, it's immediately just spiraled so quickly. The news has changed so fast from one day to the next. And then of course there's Monday Night Raw itself, which did a relatively decent reset post WrestleMania season. What's going to be the big storyline arc over the course of this summer, giving us that answer in the Seth Rollins stable, or like the new Dangerous Alliance, as it's very quickly being called on social media. But yeah, it's fair to say, since I last recorded, so much has happened. Absolutely crazy week, which is kind of why I was like, the peripheral stuff, maybe I don't go into as much detail into that as possible, and as normal, I shove that responsibility onto Trish and Sarah. Sometimes you know, take responsibility for yourself, Matt, but you know, there's so much shit to already recover. It's a crazy weekend. But my thing here is to go through the show. So let's start with WrestleMania Night 1. I'll get to Cody and John Cena. I'll get to it. It's what I meant by like, how the hell do I cover this weekend? Not just the shows themselves, but there was so much shit happened. Let's jump on over to Las Vegas, Nevada for WrestleMania Night 1, and Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Seth Rollins. Trips himself was in the ring for the first pop for the second year in a row for the Welcome to WrestleMania. So anyway, let's jump on over to Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Seth Rollins.
After a decade, payback is finally coming to Roman Reigns.
Paul Heyman on the line, the Paul Heyman in a truck, the Paul Heyman on a forklift, Paul Heyman on a pole. Matt, who gets Paul Heyman? First on out, Sethi Boo with a flamethrower, Roman with his ancestors on screens hanging over the ramp, and Punk with In Living Colour playing him out just like they did 12 years ago. For our second year running, our night one main event spilled into an arena walk and brawl in this like first portion. Seth and Punk eventually fighting their way back to the barricade for a big, awesome Roman dive over it. So both both lads like his Okada. Fans immediately chanted for tables, so Roman just gestured to the Spanish announce desk, and that seemed to quell that fan request. Like, the crowd just immediately happy for the long spell of in-ring offense that the match just swung into instead. But for me, it felt like a match aching for that next gear to be kicked into for a long time. But the WWE big main event flow is to hit that big move and slow down to build up to the next one. So, no surprise, the kick-up I was wanting wasn't really going to come anytime soon as I was watching it. There were some nice moments, like the Doomsday device or Seth's return to the flow, injecting some like much needed energy. For me, he's the glue of this match, he's the MVP. Like, in fact, sure, fans may be invested in the other two characters, but Rollins really was that glue keeping it together. He was the one keeping me awake and paying attention at 3:45 in the morning. He was the one. And his work on SmackDown as well, he cut a really good promo to open the show. Then the final act had your standard finisher kickout flows WWE loves for their big matches. Reigns first kicking out of Rollins' pedigree stomp combination, then out of Punk's GTS. Then our other main event beat reared its head, the in-match dialogue. Seth telling Roman he's without Heyman. He's without Seth, he's without Mox or the Bloodline. But let's team together right now to end CM Punk. Teased going Shield powerbomb, when instead Roman just then gleefully cuffed him before powerbombing both him and Punk into each announce table, which I thought was a great spot. But in the finisher kickout final act, don't forget, so the quick roll back into the ring, a subsequent spear to Seth was kicked out of, as commentary goes, "Oh my god, what a match, I can't believe they're staying in this thing." Reigns choking the life out of Punk while staring Heyman in the eyes. That focus on the wise man gave Punk the spot to reverse into the anaconda vice, but that focus on Roman gave Seth this room to sharpshooter. Then that the opening for Roman's guillotine to flow in once again. Like, not really a match finding more ways to avoid the big hitting finishes, instead of just kicking out of them. As the commentators sold that action, like all three of them are Tomohiro Ishii fighting off the damage to keep on going. All three down after a GTS spear stomp quick sequence, and of course the crowd go, "Oy!" That was then setting up the Heyman angle to end the match, setting up that Heyman chair slide spot that so many had predicted, because obviously it's the easiest drama and acting moment that comes to mind when you're thinking of a spot with Heyman's choice on clear. So instead, Heyman slides the chair to Punk, but then he gets into the ring. He's like, "Ah, okay." And for me, this is just where it came a bit see-through, unfortunately. Heyman slides the chair in, and then he gets into the ring afterwards and he's directing Punk. So, okay, you know exactly what's happening here. Especially as the crowd mics get turned up. I was like, okay, there's only one reason you're doing this. Almost feels like the entire sequence now is just completely foreshadowed. Those crowd mics turned right the hell up, ready to capture the surprise low blow. Roman unloading those chair shots onto Punk before Heyman points out Seth has his back. He has his back to Roman, just like the Shield breakup. And in WWE, there is no subtlety. As Paul Heyman shouts it, so all the way at the back of this huge arena, people immediately know he's shouting it. "Look, it's just like he did to you. It's just like the Shield breakup." That's literally what he says, word for word. There is no subtlety to this angle. It's fair to say a lot of that Las Vegas crowd were not ready for what this was setting up, as the reaction the wise man low blowing Reigns got was the loudest reaction of the match. It was like a unique low blow. It was kind of like, how do you, like, the first one to CM Punk was a low blow, but the second one to Roman Reigns, that was a low blow, and then he leaves his arm there and he gives it a wiggle, and apparently that makes it worse. I'm all for putting that into wrestling logic. There's a low blow and then there's the super low blow, but the super low blow is literally you leave your arm there and you wiggle it about. Apparently that's worse. As a man, I can confirm it's not. Not a thing. All for wrestling logic having its own all of the physics and the way of working. I'm all for that. Ending the match, giving us our new alliance, one we haven't seen before in Heyman and Rollins. I'm not really sure if I was a little disappointed or not that Rollins basically had the same presentation just with Heyman, but with the addition of Breaker, it's a whole group type of thing, and he's getting... I love the idea of Roman Reigns now being the one that has to fight through this family, like this Heyman family, this dangerous alliancey thing that's being built up. Now Roman Reigns finds himself fighting against the very type of thing that he protected himself with. I like that idea. I like that mirroring. Especially if it's like a summer angle, or if it's like a 1 year angle to get to Roman versus Rollins next year. But that match was easily the highlight of night one. It was a pretty crap night one. Just so meh. By the time it got to the 1 hour into the show, I was already tired. Compare that to the second night, where I don't think I got tired until Cody Cena. Like, even though there were matches I cared less about, I don't think I actually got tired until then. And you would think that I would be tired way earlier just because I'd already been up. But nope. Was absolutely fine until like the main event. But yeah, here 1 hour in, I was like, bloody hell. Bloody hell, I'm only like a quarter through this. Jesus. For me, the main event was very, very WWE main event style. So if you like that, and I call them story matches, they're more that than they are like a competitive type of scenario. And if you like that sort of thing, then you were delivered that in spades. Was this like a classic you'd see main event AEW? Absolutely not. Or like a big feature match or anything? It's like, no, no, this is like full storyline drama. And as I said it on the show last week, that's exactly what I thought it was going to be, with the Heyman drama being like the focal point of like huge points of the match. This is exactly what happened with the entire ending revolving around him and Dick Punches. Like it's, or Dick Wiggles. But yeah, it was a fine, for me it was a fine main event, but it's that WWE style where some people will think it's right up their street. It wasn't shit. It was a kind of match, and it was easily the highlight of the night. But the rest of the show... Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy. So I'll go through it in order just so you can get my kind of reaction as the show progresses.
And now Jay with a choke, with a sleeper on Gunther, turning Gunther's offense around him. Uso's got it locked in on Gunther. Gunther's fading. Gunther tapped out.
So we started the show with Gunther versus Jey Uso, and yes, obviously there was an uphill battle storyline wise where the perception was that as soon as Jey Uso won, even though he's saying I'm going to be the main event, he's trying to celebrate with the crowd, there was an uphill battle of just not expecting him to be anywhere near the main event. But in terms of like show pacing and stuff, I'm not sure if this should have opened the show. I don't know if I want it like later when I'm tired, because I like the idea of your world titles being in sequence at the end of the show. Yeah, I'm New Japan conditioned. But that's how I like, for me, that's how I like it. I like the idea of the card in terms of like your personal investment in it slowly building up as you get through the show. It's like you start with like a fun tag or something like that, and then the card just naturally progresses upwards, compared to WWE where they prefer to have it ebb and flow because it's a long show. They want to give you investment breaks, and there's, I thought I was talking about it before, but I was just talking about how I'm not sure if modern WWE shows need the ebb and flow, because there's 10-15 minute breaks between every single match. You're already getting your ebb. You're already getting it, so you don't need it in the match. Matches, then it just starts to feel like a waste of time. Hence, for me, the kind of reaction that you're getting with Randy Orton and Joe Hendry. If that match happens within like 5 minutes of the actual like previous match, and it itself is already quite short, so it's okay, then yeah, sure, whatever. But because we waited 15 minutes, then got it, then we had to wait another 15-20 minutes till the next match. So for me, night one, the pacing was just not quite right. I feel like a lot of that has to be down to the card order, especially as you go from Gunther Jey Uso, which is high fan investment, to New Day versus the War Raiders, which is very much like, why is this even on the show? Levels of stuff. But for me, I got like the full promo package, and then it got the New Day match, and it's just a lot. There's a lot of fluff in between the stuff, and they don't particularly care about the match because the build for it's like a TV match. Even though I have loved this act from the New Day and the heel turn, the actual content they've been given, it's just shockingly nothing. Watching Monday Night Raw, like their tag team segment is instead then transitioned into Rusev returning and beating up the Alpha Academy. It's like them being champions is like, we got you onto the show, but and that's the same feeling for WrestleMania. Like, they got him onto the show, but I mean, should it have been? My point being that I thought the card order is completely wrong for night one, because you go from high fan investment immediately to nothing, and then it's really difficult to get them back into the show. Listening to the crowd, part of me was like, oh, are they just like not mic'd up that well, or is the sound just evaporating, or is it just a quieter WrestleMania crowd than normal? Then the main event happens, and you hear the way they're reacting to the main event and the way they're reacting to those people. It's like, oh no, they just didn't care. They just weren't invested in it, and then the actual matches themselves didn't do enough to actually get them invested into the show. There's some better than others, but I didn't get into any of the matches until Jade Cargill, Naomi, and then I think the main event was the only other one I properly got into. But anyway, let's go through the actual content of the matches. So Gunther, Jey Uso, they got a Street Fighter ad on stage before immediately transitioning into Jey Uso's big yeet entrance. The answer is yes. The man took his sweet ass time as production showed off the sweeping drone shots, taking ages as they also introduced commentary and showed off the Saudi power names. Like, what is going on? Gunther got like a fifth of the time, but he doesn't need it. And also, thank you, we're almost 20 minutes deep, and so get to it, chaps. 20 minutes into the show, and now the bell can finally ring. A heated collar and elbow tie-up. A match trying to balance I bathe in your brother's blood with proving the challenger can rise to the Austrian champion's wrestling level. For me, it didn't quite gel in that way. They weren't able to keep the level of animosity in tow with Jey Uso proving himself that he can be the world event champion level contender in the company and can be that kind of level of act. It was almost like it was a story operating on trying to operate in two different levels, and they were able to operate on each level but only separately. They were never able to do it like together when it came to like the actual match here. They successfully did it the 2 weeks before WrestleMania with the way that Jey Uso steps up and addresses Gunther, saying that I'm no longer afraid type of stuff in response to what he did to Jey. For me, that's when they got the balance absolutely nailed. In the match itself, it then kind of just, that animosity part from the Jimmy stuff kind of just faded away a bit, and he could explain it through the character of Jey Uso being like, no, he's now just going to prove to Gunther through the competition, and that's where he's directing that anger and animosity he's actually just threw into the wrestling. But it does mean in the actual story we're being presented, that's almost coming up with an excuse to kind of just drop it, put it to the side. It's semi-included, but really the focus is back onto Jey Uso proving himself that he can really go at that level. The answer initially showed some promise for Jey, but once the chops and European uppercuts started hitting, things began to slow, and into the, I'll generously call it, heat building segments, we swung a spear against the flow, swung the match, but those chops just snapped right back. Powerbomb with a high stack gave Jey his big move kick out, but we weren't exactly heated into a cheering high. Rana and a spear grounded Gunther for the splash, but another kick out. Commentary talked about how both men have been hitting their finishers, but momentum wise it still felt like we were in the second gear. Gunther teased walking away with the belt for our fake out near fall, cutting off Uso's dive, taking advantage of the ref moving out of the way to wallop the lad with the title. Big splash kick out of, before giving us Jey only escaping the choke via rope break. Finally, it felt like one of the lads had momentum rather than just stuff happening. And in AEW, this is normally the point where it's like, okay, the gears are starting to kick up. In a WWE match, especially like a Jey Uso match, it's more the, this is where we're kicking up into the finish. And the momentum in this portion will build, but there is no like next gear afterwards. A long stretch of Gunther finally getting his stretch of dominance over a tired lad. The perfect setup for the crowd to get behind Jey with those yeet chants for the fight back. Uso's chest red after fighting on up. His own power bomb on the bigger lad was way better than I was expecting. Another spear, another climb high for a second Uso splash. Back up again for an immediate follow-up, and then again for the trifecta. All building to Jey winning via choking the champion out, making Gunther tap on the big WrestleMania stage. Like, personally, I'm fine with it within the context of the story, and Gunther's reaction afterwards kind of works. It didn't feel like it was at the apex moment of the match. It kind of just happened, so it wasn't as big of a reaction as it could have been. Got more complaints with the match than the ending. Like, it's not the biggest complaint ending is easily John Cena Cody Rhodes. Like, in comparison, this is ace material. In comparison, because the crowd like properly reacts instead of just being very confused. With this, they're like properly in for it. And afterwards, Jimmy was out celebrating the ring with his brother, having a wee dance and back out through the crowd with the World Heavyweight Championship over his shoulder. I mean, congrats for those people who enjoy the Jey Uso matches, but not for me. I liked the Gunther reaction on Monday Night Raw afterwards, but in terms of this actual show,
Cover by Woods, hook of the leg, Kofi Kingston with the assist, and the New Day win a 12 tag team.
The World Tag Team Championship, War Raiders versus New Day. War Raiders dressed as Clash of Clans characters for their Clash of Clans sponsored title defense. Oh, they look like such dorks. For a match I was kind of forgetting was happening as I was watching it. Like, hey, it was 1 a.m. Like, give a sleepy Englishman some leeway. Both teams able to fend off the other's biggest tag swings until poor Kofi took the Ivar moonsault on the WrestleMania stage. But still, Kofi was...
Hey, baseball fans, go yard with BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Enjoy top odds on your favorite home run bets, fast and convenient ways to play same-game parlays, special boosts and tokens, and so much more. From the first pitch to the game-winning fireworks, there are more ways than ever to supercharge your excitement. Download the BetMGM app and get your piece of MLB action. BetMGM is an official partner of Major League Baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, available in the U.S. For New York, 8778. HOPE-NY. Or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. First bet offers for new customers only. All other promotions for existing customers. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need. And 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required. No activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Able to stop the Raiders from getting their boy. In the end, Kofi held Ivar's leg from ringside and running like they stole something. Called by Pat after they sprinted up the ramp with the titles. The Midnight Express successfully kept the big lad down. No Big E involvement, no angle, just a straight up win and escape. Felt like a Raw segment, had absolutely no business doing here. The absolute just dive down in terms of fan investment and match quality after the World Heavyweight Championship opening just absolutely seemed to take the crowd out of it, which unfortunately means they're not really invested when it gets to Cargill versus Naomi either, which I've jumped straight into because War Raiders New Day I've just got nothing for. Like, why is this here? I mean, I liked New Day being on the card. I really wanted, but only if there's something for them. Put some effort in beforehand to like really give them something. Like, here it's almost like a token. Like, why are you even beefing them? That's not ruining the flow of the card, because the rest of the other matches probably need reorganizing as well. But we then go into Jade Cargill versus Naomi.
He's graduated from your show.
He's very accurate at calling weather systems and storms.
There's a major storm of ruin in Vegas.
It was a good job we're indoors, isn't it?
Why do you always have to ruin...
Cargill with a lad from Pat's show doing a green screen weather report. Like, I'm sure she'll have cooler entrances down the line. This was just kind of dorky. A run of baddie ringside offense for Naomi to play booze with the X-Factor face-planting Jade. A blockbuster off the steps flew nicely as well. But after that, it was time for your WWE flow of headlock pace slower. When I was just talking about how, like, going to Jey Uso is not really that my kind of flow, but the crowd were hyped for the ending and they like doing the yeet stuff, then the tag team match just seemed to just take all investment out of it. Not forgetting there's like 15 minutes between each of these matches, so it isn't like, oh, it's not too bad because the match is only like 5 to 10 minutes and move on to the next thing. Yeah, it is only 5 to 10 minutes, but you actually move on to the next advertising block, and then with the big video package playing, then you get the big WrestleMania entrances. You don't actually get to the next match until it's 10, 15 minutes later. There's no such thing on these cards as, it's only just a little bit of time, so it's no big deal. Well, it's not anymore, because you've got all the stuff on either side of it. Suddenly, everything's made to feel like a big deal, which means when it is like a shorter, jokey thing, you feel like you've had your time wasted. Eventually, the pace kicks up with Cargill throwing power, a pattern of Naomi going deeper into the well, only for the big strong lass to use her strength to stop her again and again. Biggest looking like it was going to be a Brett's rope halting of a Rana into the jaded hold. Instead, reversed nicely again into a bulldog from Naomi. The final flow here was the most I had been into the show at this point. Naomi up on the shoulders in the electric chair, spun round hard and into a great looking powerbomb, which was more than enough to have the last out for Jaded to finish us off, with commentary going hard and calling Cargill a star. They were selling that so hard as she did her win. Ultimately though, it's something that kind of got lost in the shuffle over the course of the WrestleMania weekend. Like, unfortunately, it's a match which just, there's so much more other stuff which will take focus, and this just kind of falls down to the background. SmackDown, I think, is a really good opportunity just to lift it back up again. Just put the effort into reminding us that this definitely did happen at WrestleMania, because the news has moved on so incredibly quickly. Just reminding us that this has definitely happened. That you don't just have to plug the show or all about the writers. No, you can do this stuff though. Speaking of SmackDown stuff. The United States Championship, LA Knight versus Jacob Fatu. Fatu is so over, and this match so perfectly positioned to jump into that fire. Knight's still over too, but there's just something different about the difference maker that is big Jacob Fatu. Fatu. Vatu rippled out as the man popped up for his first moonsault gander, but instead we flew with Knight's suplex popping up into a flipping of the man backwards overhead. Vatu did such an amazing job at making the champion look great too, that you can see why Focus so hot on this lad. Dueling chance right before the biggest spot of the match, the pop-up moonsault rotation caught into a BFT for the show's first true big mid-match reaction. This was a genuine big pop during the middle of a match. For the first time, we're four matches deep. Finally a big match reaction. The crowd on camera stayed on their feet afterwards till Fatu flew with two pop-up moonsaults for the win and his first singles title in WWE. This match finally woke the crowd up into a recognisable atmosphere, so it's time to sit them back down. We had a WWE show. Back onto your asses.
Highlight reel moment upcoming.
And the flying headbutt with a loaded mask. El Grande Americano wins his WrestleMania.
El Grande Americano versus Rey Fénix. Rey Mysterio injured on Smackers literally the night before WrestleMania, so a replacement Rey was found, Rey Fénix, in the company 3 weeks and suddenly finding himself in a singles match at WrestleMania. Before the match even started, Gable got into it at ringside with Vikingo. The news of WWE acquiring AAA broke a couple hours before the show, already giving us unexpected sights with lads flown in for the announcement, and they make the AAA announcement and immediately have their fake luchador, who's purposely insulting the Mexican people, the magicians of the luchador. They have him beat an actual incredibly talented luchador in the face of the AAA CEOs and all this stuff. I was like, oh, they can do what they want with it now, they bought it. And then there was the news breaking afterwards that there's already rumblings about changing the name to NXT Mexico, to which I immediately just go, ha. Just, Regarding this match, like, sure, I'm not into the gimmick, but Chad Gable versus Rey Fénix is not a pairing I'm unhappy about getting to see. Fénix moves like no one else, and Gable is just so smooth at launching a lad. But Jesus, the flippy do of the match surprisingly came from Gable instead of Rey. A moonsault with an additional full rotation executed absolutely perfectly. Like, bloody hell, well done, Chad. The ending came with Rey running the ropes, kicking Chad, but the loaded mask hurt his foot, surviving the ankle lock, but loaded mask offense finished him off for good. First, a straight usage of the face. Second, a diving headbutt, and the El Grande Americano gimmick lives on for what might be at least a whole run through the summer. He can be like the big heel of the AAA deal. Damn it, I've rhymed it. It's going to happen now. Vikingo in the ring after the match to help Fénix up off the mat. After all that, we got a wee recap of the AAA announcement with the top suits shown ringside as well. And congratulations, you've signed this deal with us. We're immediately going to squash the most talented luchador we've got. Hooray! And finally from this night, the WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair.
Prettiest moonsault ever connects to Charlotte Flair. Cover now, hook of the leg. What a win at WrestleMania.
Mattel gave Tiffy a Barbie doll box to make her entrance in. Apparently, Tiffany Stratton has had this idea for a while as well as her entrance. Her big WrestleMania debut in what should be her true moment of arrival in front of a crowd fully against Charlotte Flair. They were so against her, all together as one, this crowd. It started with like actual animosity and straight to the outside for a quick sparring before reminding us how good a wrestler Flair is. The crowd just booed, but commentary went hard into, isn't Flair amazing? There was a lot of have a nice sequence that is really well executed, then into a slow panning shot around the ring for the slowing down period of the match. It's the WWE way, but these two certainly have it in them to be able to go at least a tad quicker. As the match went on, the commentary switched gears into calling it as a match of attrition, with both lasses starting to counter each other more frequently and the pace kicking up a smidge. Tiffy to ringside signaled the big Mania moonsault moment. Instead, the champion went all mean on Flair's sparkly harness knee, turning the match into a battle of who could hurt the other person's knee more. British moonsault blocked by knees. Ah, me knee. I blocked the moonsault move with my knee and now my knees hurt. Instead, Charlotte attempting a cheeky roll-up. Natural selection hit like an inverted blockbuster as Flair dove off Brett's rope for the near fall. Final run had the crowd reacting, so behind the champion and against Flair. Right when I thought it was time to kick into that final fire gear was when we got the ending. It's the other WWE traditional way. Like, okay, cool, you've hyped it up. We're ready to kick in the next gear. And that's the peak that we ended on. So no big final sprint, but Stratton finally hit the prettiest moonsault and won. The final bit off a tad, like with Flair's dive into the corner, just a tad clunky, and that took out of the finish as well, because the setup for the finish wasn't quite believable. It's what really worked about the Jade Cargill-Naomi match, was the powerbomb and the way it was hit. You really believed that Naomi was finally out enough for the finisher to be hit. Whilst in this one, there's the setup's just clunky, so when even though the move is hit absolutely fine. But the crowd were more than happy to just be behind Stratton's victory. They got to see that, so they were cheering all happy. And you could just see that these two did lay into for each other. Tiffany Shelton with a chipped tooth and bruises on her face. Like, they properly did lay into each other in this match. But it was nowhere near... When the match was announced, I was like, oh, okay, so these are two great athletes and you could really use Flair to really propel Shelton up with a great match. It was just a good match. It was just an okay match. On the WrestleMania stage where something is just good, it feels a level lower. Because you want that something, especially on a show that was struggling to get going, and then just finally the main event did so. Yeah, but yes, I was not a fan of Night 1. And that seems to be pretty common amongst everybody else as well. Night 2, easily the superior night. Easily the worst main event. The conversation did happen of, was it the worst main event? Like, I mean, we've had John Cena, Miz. This did have Cody in it. So no matter what, Cody is elevating the match. Actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. I've got a format for this show. I've got audio clips to play. So let's jump on over to WrestleMania 41, Night 2, to the main event, the WWE Undisputed Universal Championship. Let's finally talk about it. Cody Rhodes versus John Cena.
That'll be a perfect Cena ambassador.
Now. Covered by Cena. Covered by Cena. Patton's in the ring. John Cena has set the record. John Cena is a 17-time world champion.
After a much, much better Night 2 show came the biggest build match of the whole weekend, the final year of John Cena, his final WrestleMania, concluding its first act in tow with Cody finishing his first year as champion. And it's awful. It's so bad. It is so, so bad. My biggest fear was when John Cena used to wrestle, the way that you... Part of the criticism was his matches were always struggled the same way. He would just take all of the beating from the opposition, five moves of doom, win. And that's kind of where the five moves of doom meme came from. It wasn't just like, oh, he's going to hit his five moves every single time. It's like, no, within like the actual structure of the match, the opposition would get to do their offense, but because he would just shake it off, it never felt like their offense was going to beat him. Therefore, they don't feel like genuine competitors that can take him down because he's just waiting for him to hit his five moves and win. So it's a bit of a worry where he's now in that heel role where he's the one slowing stuff down. And what does he do? Not a lot. For me, I'm going to be forgiving of it if the ending is strong. Like, if you've got John Cena really slowing it down, the first third of the match is the most boring shit you've ever seen in your life. The second half, or the second third, starts to kick up a little bit, and you're starting to see a few finishes and people kicking out, but I'm still not invested. If the final third is really strong or over-the-top booking bullshit, or whatever, or you're mirroring what happened last year where Cody got his friends to counter the baddies or whatever, or you're doing what you have set up on television, where you have The Rock coming out, and I'm guess going to have to talk about The Rock's comments as well when I get to the actual ending of it. But in terms of the the worst finish of the weekend, the actual finish in terms of what they're doing with the John Cena character, I don't mind. I'm absolutely fine with a villain getting a huge win like this and us then having to live with the consequences. The problem is it came at the complete wrong part of the match. Travis Scott taking an absolute age to walk down to the ring. Then you get Cody getting his giving that guy his comeuppance, but then John Cena does the whole title thing and the dick kick again. Not a great weekend for dicks. But Cody looks like a chump. It's the dumb I heard a few other people saying it, that it's the dumb babyface syndrome. Like, no, I can't bring myself to hit you with the title and do all this stuff. For me, the main problem is the character's already had this beat, and this rewinds him back and doesn't really fit into the Cody character we were told at the Rumble. For me, that's a defense. The defense to come from WWE is Cody in this moment couldn't do it, and that's the thing he's going to have to overcome to beat John Cena. Like, maybe losing a part of himself so they can do it, or the whole point was he refused to lose a part of himself, he refused to do what John Cena did and kept his integrity, but he will fight back type of stuff. Only problem is, we saw him overcome this problem against Kevin Owens at the Rumble. Like, this exact thing where he was taking it a bit too far to be able to defeat an opponent. And for me, it's a layer of a babyface, which is so, so needed. If he's too clean, you get the John Cena problem. And arguably, in this moment, that's exactly what happened to Cody. So the only problem is, it feels like we're about to enter on a long journey for Cody Rhodes to be able to overcome not being able to do the thing which cost him the title. Only problem is we've already had that beat, so we're revisiting a beat we have already done. So this entire run is going to feel like such a waste of time. And yet on top of that, the quality of the match. So yes, the actual story narrative part they're doing, but in terms of like the actual quality of the match, it was one third slow and boring. It's incredibly dull. Sometimes it can be fine if it then kicks off a gear. Second third, you're starting to get kick outs of stuff, and then it just ends. The ending's weak. It's a match that finishes in second gear because it never really fully transitions transitions into that third one, especially as it's like, oh, we're going into third gear. Then Travis Scott takes an absolute age. It's like, ah, we could go back to second. Like, it's fine. There's a bit of traffic. We can slow down a bit. In terms of like the different like presentations of like the characters and entrances and things, like John Cena got the basic white text on a black background, just John Cena, and I thought that really worked well for what the character's trying to do. No fancy mania extravagance, with the lights down and the spotlight all on him for the last time. Cody, fair to say, the exact opposite, with motocross bikes, massive pyro blasting all over the place, him popping up with his silly little skelly mask. There's a whole lot of pomp and circumstance. And unsurprisingly, the atmosphere was white hot right after the bell rang. Proof that they were onto something correctly, does then the execution... Or is it really the execution? Like, it was how it was done. It's how it was written. It's kind of broken this part. But it has been that question. My big worry with the whole John Cena heel turn is because eventually at some point, you have to watch a wrestle. You have to watch him wrestle the current WWE main event style. That extended runtime associated with the match being an epic. And that was the thing I was least excited to see. Like, you know you're in for it when the big move of the flow is a double axe handle. Like, oh dear. To be fair, you can use that as like, that's genuinely to get that reaction out of the crowd, and it does succeed in it. But then the kick up and the ending later never comes. So you just serve them boring shit and then never kind of reward them for keeping to pay attention. Cody was the one given the hot fire and injection into the match. Even if Las Vegas had decided that they just wanted the famous greatest hits of John Cena, like nothing Cena could do would turn that crowd against him. Like, it's the last time, so it doesn't matter the story. They're going to cheer the retiring former company ace. Just everything about this just screams, probably should have turned heel here. I'd not be surprised if that was the original plan. Then everything gets rocked up, completely falls apart. Then you do the heel turn there so you can feed it in with the rock stuff. And it's just kind of making it up, flying by the seat of their pants. The story now, pacing wise and everything, just completely thrown all over the place. And then you got to have John Cena do a big heel main event. Oh, but this was so boring. And in that second third, the double A was kicked out of, then a super double A off Brett's rope. Commentary talked about both lads having their best shots like a minute later, after there was a super Cody Cutter that kicked out of too. Like, sure, I may have been tired, but I'm watching this, and at this point, the Las Vegas crowd is reacting to every beat. Like, they love the finisher kickout flows, even if to me it felt like, okay, we're in second gear transitioning to third. But in those back and forth flows, the ref had been knocked down, and you know what that means. Turnbuckle exposed, Cody's head off the steel twice, and a fourth AA for another kickout. After that failure, that's when Travis Scott came out, taking his sweet-ass time down the long ramp, giving him the crossroads to give that guy his comeuppance. Cena sneak attack with the championship, stopped by Cody, but he can't hit the man in return. John Cena kicked to the dick, title shot to the head, the ref called in and counted the three, and the crowd go, oh, that's the end. Oh, okay. Then they cheer. It's a really weird response of, oh, that finish sucks. Oh, wait, John Cena's champion. Yay! Like, it's a really weird response. So then people watching at home, they don't get that second reaction. That first one stays. I'm just, oh, that's the end. Oh, that's a bit naff. Especially as it's the big WrestleMania thing and you've got the cloud of last year's WrestleMania. It's a positive cloud of what they were able to do the previous year. And it's not a case of having too high expectations. It's the story they set up. It's part of it is what happened last year. Then you've brought The Rock back. You've directly brought a big proponent of what happened last year into the fray. A big, big factor to what happened. And there wasn't apparently like never any plan for being in WrestleMania. But yeah, he's injected into this, meaning when he doesn't show up, it feels lesser than. It feels naff. Well, the fact there isn't anything after Travis Scott. I'm assuming they gave us a crossroads because they were like, there's got to be kind of some come up and there's got to be like some reference to it. So we'll have Travis Scott come up. He can kind of be the thing that then really swings into the title match bit. Cody looks naff. It's like, yeah, you can't hit him with the title, but you can still hit him. You don't have to be that much of a loser. But yeah, so the Cody character looks naff. It's good that apparently the word is that Cody's going to be taking like a month off at least or so. For me, that's perfect. And just get a semi kind of he's coming back return type of reaction for him. I think keeping him around in the atmosphere and aftermath of WrestleMania, probably not the best idea. Just keep him off the shows for a bit as you build up the Seth heel faction, as you build up like the Fatu stuff, whatever they're doing on SmackDown. But this did absolutely suck. I'm not going to call it the worst WrestleMania main event of all time. We do have Roman Reigns versus The Undertaker, Roman Reigns versus Triple H. Like, we do have some pretty bad WrestleMania main events. As I said, The Miz versus versus John Cena. We have got some bad main events. Cody Rhodes by himself elevates it above all of them, but it is also incredibly boring, incredibly dull. Then at that point where you're kind of just ready for what has narratively been set up to happen, it then doesn't happen. You get part one of where it should be going, and then it just, the car just stalls and it just stops. I feel like for the character, it's the right thing to end on. But when it happened, this is the point where Cody kicks out again. It's not the finish at all. And that's not me like saying that days after in hindsight. That was like my immediate reaction. I was like, oh, that's naff. That's not the right time. Obviously, I've written my words down, so I've formulated my thoughts a little bit more. But at the time, just my immediate reaction. I was like, oh, that was shit. Anyway, let's go through the rest of the card. The Women's World Heavyweight Championship, Io Sky, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, easily the best thing on the both nights. It's not even close. It's like leagues above anything else on the show on both nights.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Pardon the pun, it's sky high above everything else.
Bianca, oh my goodness!
Oh no! Oh no! Oh no!
Using the brain as a weapon! KOD by Belair! For the win! Io Sky! Over the moonsault! Cover on Belair! Sky wins! Io Sky wins! What?
Io was also out first. Like, it always irks me when the champion's out first. Unless it's like a huge star returning and they get a second entrance. It's like, Bianca was out second with kids spinning their long hair and dancing, hugging the kid that was her stepdaughter too. Io cheered, Bianca booed, but the loudest reaction was saved for the Aussie, Rhea Ripley, with the reaction of a huge star. No, Bianca hasn't turned heel. Las Vegas were just booing her. I was pretty certain because they wanted Rhea Ripley to win. None of that matters. Because it was the match I was looking forward to the most, and it delivered above what I was expecting. Like, from minute one, there's just a buzz in the atmosphere, like a much greater buzz compared to their men's counterpart of night one. In the men's opener for night one, it's kind of like an expectancy of this is probably going to go how we want it to. So there's a positive buzz, but this one's got a louder one. There's just something in the air here. And they were given the ball to just go. Like, yes, like, you're damn right they were let go. Like, to be fair, it was a much quicker pace than anything on the previous night as well. The first initial flows were great enough, never mind when Rhea started doing shit like razors edging Io right into Bianca. The crowd responded in kind too. Like, after an awesome flow with Ripley big booting Belair, only to get drop kicked by Io, who reveled in the cheer of Las Vegas too long and got pounced. Like, I loved it. So many great moments of a sequence building on top of itself with the three of them. And the execution. Like, every sequence was executed so damn well. Like, so damn well by all three of them. Ripley, Brett's rope riptide, just like she did to Becky last year, this time was reversed by Io and ignited us into another flash sequence that had the crowd applauding louder than anything. No reverse Rana for Io. Instead, Cesaro'd into the ring post, took a dunk. Just like, Jesus. Leading to Bianca and Ripley going at it in a back and forth with such animosity. Belair hair whipping and KODing, but Sky then flew with the moonsault to retain. A great ending, hitting at a momentum peak, not even close to outstaying any sort of welcome. If anything, an even more perfect opener that left me wanting more. So when Rhea Ripley comes out and she stares down Io and Monday Night Raw, like, yeah, give me more of this. These three were absolutely amazing. Like, it's not really WrestleMania that I'm going to really want to go back and watch. However, I'm probably going to check out this match again because this match is exceptional. I really enjoyed this, and if I went back and watched it, I know I'd enjoy it again. Could even just serve it me again at SummerSlam and I'd be happy. A second match that I relatively enjoyed, the Sin City Street Fight, as Drew McIntyre, via just pure force of will, gets us invested in this nothing feud against Damian Priest.
Damian Priest, who also idolized The Undertaker, set through the tables! Priest took a little bit too much time on the tightrope, and McIntyre made him pay!
a medieval Doom entrance for Drew. He wanted to get that kit off as quick as possible. But my immediate reaction was, yeah, fair to say Doom is a tad cooler of a sponsor than Eric and Ivar as the Clash of Cans characters on night one. But they look like dorks. Like, I admit, Drew didn't look like great. But for me, it's not even close which one's cooler. Then Damian Priest was played out by the guitarist for Slayer with Fire Pyro to add to the call. Immediately out to ringside to brawl about, ring posts, steel steps, barricades and all. Don't worry, we've got a table slide into the ring to just let us know they would eventually make their way to it. McIntyre taking his brother's phone to take a selfie with the downed Damien for a lovely laugh in Las Vegas too. And that's been the image that's kind of stayed of this match. Steel steps, corner pop chairs and a table. A setting for a lovely dinner. Each time flowed like Drew innovation countered last minute by Priest. Crazy Drew went for a white noise, but ate a razor's edge through the table instead. Then later with blood already on his back from the table, taking the steel steps bump for Fire delivering a Future Shock DDT, eventually devolved into a Big Lad Slobber Knocker and a great pop with Priest going old school to only get pushed off through two ringside tables, and an awesome Claymore into the corner prop chair for the win. This was just a fun clobber match. This was the style of match that Night 2 needed desperately after the World Championship match. In terms of like card pacing, where you have your white hot opener that the crowd are really into, just having a fun clobber like this afterwards, like really, it needed the SmackDown tag. It needed those reversed. It needed the TLC match to come in that spot. Like, yeah, that's similar to last year, but I feel like, especially with WWE pacing, where there is that 15-minute gap between each match, really, a clobber match on a big WrestleMania at the stage is kind of what it needs to fall into. Then after that, there's the momentum of the show continued. The Intercontinental Championship, Bron Breakker versus Penta versus Finn Balor versus Dominic Mysterio, Zero Miero on the WrestleMania stage. But with the storyline focus on the Judgment Day tension, was the Chaos X-Men still able to dance?
To win the ice! Dominic with a frog splash and the cover on Balor. Dominic wins the championship.
Braun immediately established that he and Penta weren't friends, but instead of immediately flowing into circumstances that changed that, the champion just ran riot and barreled through all three lads. As soon as Breakker had fallen to the power lad's one weakness, the ring post, Carlito immediately showed his face. Speaking of Breakker, bloody hell, that double suplex was impressive. Like, in this match, he was just given the room to run his exciting explosiveness. Like, with that note of, make sure Braun looks good, like, clearly the memo in spite of, like, any storyline extra stuff they're doing. Eventually, Dom and Balor found themselves as the two, with the former going to 619, his stablemate, and getting stomped for his troubles. The crowd bubbling behind Mysterio was clearly audible during these moments. Like, the memo had rumbled its way through already to the crowd. Like, that was the finish they wanted, and the match was going to give it to them. Carlito distraction saved after a Penta Destroyer, looking like an announced desk interference, but instead Breakker ran the desk to super spear the man to death. Like, away goes Carlito. The crowd decided they're cheering for Dom in the final flow, him the man they were cheering over all the others. Balor did his best to screw away Mysterio's momentum, but in the end it was he who Dom fog splashed onto for the win. The crowd was so hot for that man and was so damn loud on their feet for this win. To a point where after the match as well, he's kind of gone part way up the ramp and then he runs back down again to get a second cheer. On Monday Night Raw, he's like straight heel. Like, he's straight back to being a bad guy. JD McDonagh interference getting him to retain the title. But in this one night, this was okay, we've got something here with this guy. The WWE crowds are really digging into him. It's like, hey, they are telling us that this is the guy they want. Both Dom and Jacob Fatu are two guys that the crowds have been telling them that they want to see elevated. And you ask, and he's been given. It has been received. Then comes the final, I want to call this a peak. Not a lot of people considered this a peak. And I definitely understand just with that problem of having like 10-15 minutes between every single match. So when you get Randy Orton's special guest and it's just like a jokey kind of fun segment, it really feels like a waste of time. But like, I was still having fun with the show at this point. So Randy Orton versus his mystery guest. Say his name and he appears. The TNA World Champion was not who I was expecting at all. I'd fully settled on like Rusev or Aleister Black. We believe chanted as we got what was much more felt like a wee little showcase match. Plus, fair to say, in WWE's mind, Joe Hendry is very much beatable. Having that TNA championship around his waist is not going to change that. The conditioning to get them to pop for the smile turnaround to the camera worked perfectly too. The second time, also getting the same level pop, and then immediately ate an RKO. Just a bit of crack, over and done within 5 minutes. But add on the posing and promo video as beforehand, it's a little more of a time waste. The match after that was AJ Styles versus the Transphobe. All I've written is, nope, no comment, we move on. Which I think, given what they did delivered is kind of fitting. I've gone against the prompt. I did an extra statement. And the final thing to talk about from night two, the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship, Liv Morgan and Raquel Gonzalez versus Lyra Valkyria and... I mean, I wrote the question marks, but there's only one woman you drop Bayley off the card for when the like lass isn't injured in any form. It's Bucky! After a full year, the man is back. Liv and Raquel, all full glum face acting in response. Lyra took the brunt of the baddie stompy stomps because you can bet your ass Lynch was held back for that hot tag. In the end, Oblivion was broken up by Lyra, but no such shave was coming for Liv after the manhandle slam. New champions! And also very throwaway. Very nothing. It was a WrestleMania moment. The next night in Raw, she turns heel. It's a very nothing. After this, the final thing to talk about was when we got the glass breaking and Stone Cold getting his quad bike pop, zooming around and crashing into the barricade like the drunk old man that he is. As he's in the ring announcing the WWE attendance number, like Nick Khan is in real time addressing what could be possibly a huge suing situation, like a huge, it's trying to quell it down. He immediately pounced. Like, and you know he's got to be worried if he's like immediately on camera addressing it. But yeah, Stone Cold was in the ring, he got to announce the attendance number, the combined number for both nights, then drinking his alcohol-free cans and popping off. Security also checked on the person behind the barricade. Just don't drink and drive, folks. Stone Cold showing you why immediately right there. But yeah, overall, it's a very interesting WrestleMania week. And then you get the whole stuff with The Rock just a bit shifting the blame, like, oh, I had nothing to do with that shit. Emmanuel asked me to come into Elimination Chamber to sell some tickets. So there was no story, there was no plan. Pretty much everything that was being reported by Meltzer, by Sean WhatsApp, everything was accurate. And will that stop people in the future from calling them out when they don't like what the reporting is and they go, oh, you must be lying, you must be... Will that stop them doing that in the future? Absolutely not. This cycle has repeated I don't know how many times and will continue to repeat. One of the most predictable cycles, this is how this rotates. But yeah, it was it's an odd WrestleMania weekend because night one just sucks and then there's a strong main event. Then night two is a much stronger card until it gets to the Randy Orton versus Joe Hendry surprise match. And there you start to see like some people drop off. I was still having a decent time at that. Then like, yeah, you got the AJ Styles transphobe stuff. Then the Becky match is just a bit of a pop and a throwaway. And then the main event just sucks. It's a hot atmosphere when the match begins. Then the match is just boring. And by the time we are left, that is all about how you leave them. And they did not leave us positive. But that wasn't the final thing, was it? This is the WrestleMania special, so of course I have to talk about a third show. So let's jump on over quickly to the Raw after Mania with John Cena, Wabba, Boo. it's the worst one I've done. A prepared statement for the ring announcer to read out, ending with the moniker now official, the last real champion. Right after Cena gaslit the crowd and then told them they've gone soft, they started chanting, "We are sorry." It's the benefit of the crowd that really would hijack the show, now getting their wrestling fix elsewhere and leaving WWE attendees to be those willing to pay over their life savings to attend a Raw taping. A touch I did like was counting down his 36 appearances on his contract, the number up on the Tron, as it's made fully clear he only has 27 left. There is no one in the WWE with ruthless aggression of John Cena. The giving hero that he is, letting the fans get out their phone cameras, RKO out of nowhere, and they finally have the crowd that will be happy to eat this matchup as they do John Cena, Randy Orton, one last time, and after watching that WrestleMania main event, I want nothing less. This is the thing I would like to see the least. It's like, oh no. A loud sing-along with the man's theme afterwards, whilst I sat there doing what I could to not think about what a Cena versus Orton match looks like in 2025. Like, oh, please no. Please don't know. And then just the other thing to quickly talk, there were a few like other notes to talk about, like Stephanie Vaccurvis at Sky being given some time, but they were given some decent time to flow, but it's another jump in interference ending with Brock and Perez and Julia. They got the that's about with Ripley coming out too. Sami Zayn was the guy to first go out and talk to Jey Uso, almost doing a full party segment, but they did have a little note in there where Sami Zayn got off a turnbuckle earlier and looked at Jey and the crowd had their little rumble of oh, and then they just kind of left it off from there. So the tension's there for the rest of the segment, but what they're actually doing, they never play about it at all. Rusev Day returned. I talked about that earlier with the Alpha Academy. Becky and Lyra's Irish tag team reign lasted for not even a day. It immediately dropped, and Becky being stuck on the outside was the reason. And Lyra's getting a lot of time to actually rain fire, but it was just too much because Becky was just constantly on the outside. Then Becky's the one who turns heel on Lyra. And that kind of feeds into the main event angle, because there's rumblings that Becky could be the female person injected into this group, because it's almost like a modern day thing in WWE where each group has a female member, and in a dangerous alliance, maybe Becky Lynch has just turned heel, could be that final person. I mean, it could be a lot of people, but the final 10 minutes of the show were dedicated to Seth Rollins with Paul Heyman in tow. Sethy booed, leaving his promo in slow, deliberate cadence. CM Punk's music hit before he could deliver his lines, the Chicago man taping his fists as he made his way down and just immediately started laying. Then his attention turned to Heyman. Now Seth the one to stop hands being put onto the wise man. The end of the show credits rolled as Heyman held the mic and began talking. Like, this is an odd... like, there's absolutely no way of convincing anybody this is the ending, so just an odd time to play it, unless it's just a pure accident. Hyping Rollins as the number one top star in the whole of this industry, which brings out the number one top star in WWE, Roman Reigns. The second man out for a fight, successfully spearing the man out of his boots. Superman punched to Heyman, and Roman's shirt came off to a big cheer. Camera in close for the ooh-ah spear, interrupted by a hooded figure who is Bron Breakker, spearing Punk as well, embraced by Seth and sent to beat up Roman at ringside, which he did by charging around the ring and charging the big lad through the barricade. Breakker giving the big push under Seth as the new Paul Heyman guy. Feels like a main event, just injection of something new which is so desperately needed. And he's in that mid-card completely proving himself. And with the Intercontinental Championship, him losing that is in terms of like a reset type of thing with momentum. Like, this is a position which seems to like really be a great idea to elevate him. The crowd immediately reacting well to it as well. Going off air, Cole cementing Breakker as the new Paul Heyman guy. Oh, also in terms of the biggest pop. Biggest pop for me was definitely Gunther choking out Pat McAfee. I was like, ah, oh, yes. Turning full babyface there, Gunther. But yeah, that brings me to the end of the show. I'll call this a decently length recording given the amount of shit I've gone through, but an absolutely mad weekend of WrestleMania. And a lot of it's just like the extra stuff or just the reactions to it afterwards have seemed pretty universal. It's like, what was that main event? Then you get the expected reaction after that of, oh no, it must have been bad on purpose. When in reality, you're just watching I said it in the Discord in the week, but they're twisting themselves in knots to try and make a logic around it when you've just watched a bad episode of television. It happens. It's all right. You can move on. It's absolutely okay. There doesn't need to be some hidden meaning behind what you were watching. WWE is good at folding the reality back on itself, that they'll find a way in hindsight maybe to kind of move it about and make it work. Or like with a lot of the Rock stuff during the Bill Johnson, they just kind of didn't mention it. It's like it's stuff like that. It's just like, eh. But anyway, so that brings me to the end of the week, the end of the WrestleMania bubble. When we return for Friday, we've got a few returns, maybe still got Aleister Black to make his return. They've been hyping that up. Whatever the aftermath is on Smackers as well. But you're not going to have Cody for a while, and you're not going to have John Cena sticking around, really. So it's more about selling the absence of it, and what do they do by doing that? Like, because obviously in the Vince era, when you'd have someone like Lesnar holding the title and just not really being there, when that was the case, there were just huge portions where they just created different storylines. It was a lot easier to digest when Triple H took over, just because the way he wrote his stories was way more long term. So when somebody wasn't there for a couple of weeks, it was okay. Like, it's fine. And with Roman Reigns, it helped build him up in a more positive way, just because they constantly had storylines about him happening on television, even if he wasn't physically there. They were just better paced for him to not have to be there every week, because rest of rotation is absolutely fine. Vince had no idea how to do it though. He was like only writing 4 week stories, which means he got full stories playing out without the guy. It's just like not how it works. Anyway, an interesting WrestleMania week, it's fair to say. But I'll be back this time next week to talk about a more ordinary week of Monday Night Raw. I know what's about to happen. I've had this really big special edition, and I know come next week I'll be questioning, can I even hit 30 minutes? Because it's the Triple H way. Next week is set to be the follow-up to the big night. Like, it's normally pretty low-key. It does like big happenings. It's more of like, we're continuing stuff now, are we? Yes, so WrestleMania, I don't know, I can't call it controversial because it's just bad. It's just shit. It's not controversial if it's just bad. But 100%, if you've not watched WrestleMania, watch that opening match. It is incredible. 100% worth your time. Really, really good opening match. I enjoyed the, that's of night 2, by the way. I'm not recommending you watch Jey Uso. No, watch Ripley, Belair, Io Sky. Easy the match of the weekend. And with that, go to the newsletter. Go read the newsletter. I need to put that in the intro. I don't know why I've got it written in my notes for the ending every time. I need to move that to the start, because the newsletter is 100% worth plugging to have at the start. Again, amazing work with Trish and Tim especially, and every single writer that contributes to it too as well. Thank you to all the listeners or anyone who engages with this podcast in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to watch the WWE show so you don't have to. And with that, bid you a very tired with multiple late nights. I'm surprised it's taken me a little while to bounce back from WrestleMania week this year. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.